You are listening to Sid Weighs In, where Tuck School business professor, associate dean for executive education, and an expert on strategy and leadership, Sidney Finkelstein, shares his views on what leaders are doing, why they are doing it, and whether it makes sense for them and for you.
Hello, this is Sidney Finkelstein from the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth College, and welcome to another edition of Sid Weighs In, the podcast where we talk about my latest BBC column. And today, we're fortunate to have as our guest host, Nell Ryder. Hi, Nell.
Hi there.
How are you today?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Did you find this article interesting, or we kind of dragged you in here?
No, I loved the article. You know, as I'm kind of thinking about what I want my next step to be when I graduate Tuck next month, a big question that I'm wrestling with is, do I want to go to a company that's, you know, traditional, more established, or kind of stick with the, you know, young entrepreneurial startup model? And so I think this particular piece, which highlights some pretty fundamental differences between my generation and your generation, raises some pretty good questions for me to consider.
Well, that sounds like a good segue to get into the column. The column this week is called The Tortoise Versus the Hare at Work. Pity the tortoise in the 21st century. Stolid, careful, slowly but surely, the ways of the tortoise seem quaint in the face of an onslaught of hares run amok. Whether creating new businesses, Facebook, Amazon, Alibaba, or disrupting old ones, Uber, Roku, Coursera. But remember in the classic Aesop's fable, it's the plodding tortoise and not the speedy hare that crossed the finish line first. Is it possible that the tortoise could still win today? And what of the hare, so quick but impulsive and unschooled, calling to mind the all-nighter young executives at the helm of companies today? How important is experience and even age to successful leadership in an era where speed has become a business goal in and of itself? The answers may surprise you. There's no denying the need for speed. Startups spend more time on pivots, a fancy word for changing direction or business strategy, than ever before, while incremental improvements are probably the best we'll ever see from more bureaucratic companies. But the devaluation of experience, and that means age too, has gone so far that wisdom has fallen out of the very definition of business intelligence. The arrival of the internet era has meant youth has never been more highly valued by the business community. Silicon Valley companies, every second one seemingly started by a Harvard University dropout, Microsoft founder Bill Gates, Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg, of course, are not only reinventing how businesses are run, they are also leveraging their success to breathe new life into how philanthropies are run and how governments should be run. After all, when Zuckerberg calls U.S. President Barack Obama to lecture him on the abuses of the U.S. National Security Agency, never mind the irony of this coming from the creator of a company wholly dependent on people revealing private information about themselves to public audiences, all bets are off. The hares are surely running away with it. Except for one little thing, but very important, sleight of mind. One of the most enduring human biases is that we tend to generalize from very small sample sizes. So there's Zuckerberg, Gates, the Google guys, Jack Ma, soon to IPO Alibaba, and a bunch of other successful entrepreneurs who made it big in their 20s. But what about the tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of other 20-somethings that have failed as business leaders? Don't believe me? The crowdsourcing fundraiser Kickstarter helped raise money for more than 19,000 business ideas in 2013, the majority of which were set up by people in their 20s and 30s. But how many actually created going concerns, let alone became profitable? Venture capitalists have built an industry on the premise that they only need to win big in one out of every 10 investments. Even TV shows like Dragon's Den or Shark Tank demonstrate how few young entrepreneurs can really make it. The new business failure rate in the U.S. is so high, 50% fail within 5 years, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, that organizational sociologists have been calling the phenomenon, quote, the liability of newness for decades. Not all businesses are started by young entrepreneurs, of course, but that's what most people believe. Even venture capitalists actually prefer younger founders. So youth dominates in entrepreneurship as it does in a wider culture. Does it also influence the decisions big companies make on talent? That's not a rhetorical question. It's really not a good thing to be over 50 years old and working in a big company. When redundancies come, you're often the first to go because you're more expensive. Ironically, one of the reasons there's been an upswing in startups from entrepreneurs in their 50s is that they didn't have much of a choice. Once you're unemployable, you have to figure it out for yourself. I think it's time we counted up the real losses that arise from the devaluation of experience, not just for older workers and managers caught up in the societal meme, but for the businesses that are left behind, required to fend for themselves with one hand effectively tied behind their back. Experience may not bring speed, but it does bring a greater ability to reflect and put into perspective what is happening around you. And yes, it does bring deeper compassion for the people we live among and at work and at home. Some people call that wisdom. Once you've lived a little, the illusion of perfection has long gone. In fact, you've seen how the perfectionists you once worked with have moved on, unable to adapt to the messiness of everyday business. Once you've lived a little, it becomes harder to go about your work without paying closer attention to colleagues and empathizing with those around you. More likely, you can't help but see the nuances and subtleties of work that less experienced managers usually don't see. As a result, you're better able to motivate others because you know what makes them tick, and you're better able to influence others when you don't have direct authority over them. That's the hallmark of the effective leader. Once you've lived a little, you've seen bear markets and not just bull markets, and you've been forced to navigate around geopolitical events that periodically disrupt business plans. In fact, your skill set is exactly what inexperienced entrepreneurs need, yet so often don't value. Of course, experienced leaders don't automatically make the right calls, but they've got perspective and they use it, and they can be bold when opportunities arise. Surely we would all say that about Larry Ellison, the CEO of Oracle, who's generated more than a 25% annual return on shareholder equity over a 40-year career at the top. And is there anyone out there who doubts 83-year-old Berkshire Hathaway CEO Warren Buffett's ability to outthink the competition as he adds year after year to his legend as one of the world's greatest investors? So yes, leaders can get better with age. The youthful hare may talk a good game, but my money's on the tortoise. Who's your money on, Nell?
So my money is massively on the hare. Let it be known that I am the youngest person in my class, and I have a little bit of a bias toward, you know, the power of youth. But I guess my reaction to this article is really framed by two classes that I've taken at Tuck. The first class was it was called the Arrhythmia Finance, and more deals with finance and nothing relevant to this article. But kind of the most salient theme in that class was the idea of mean reversion, which I'll explain briefly. So the idea behind mean reversion is that every system, whether it's a financial market or a business school, has an average underlying set of behaviors. And all outcomes or events in these systems, if they're truly efficient, should always be tending toward that average. So if things are really different or if things are really working, there shouldn't be really any outliers or any kind of statistical anomalies. So when we think about this idea in the tortoise hare analogy that we're talking about, I think that the fundamental issue is that the business world today, as I'm experiencing it as 26 years old, has a very different mean from how, I guess, the tortoises are experiencing it. So we have a new average, a new way of looking at the world. And, you know, I know every young person at a certain point in time has said that their world is totally new and, like, you know, the forebears can't understand it. But I really do think with the advent of data and information and the internet just makes this, you know, business environment that I'm entering very, very, very different from the one that my father entered, who would obviously be a tortoise in this analogy. So, you know, I think that has made the world a lot more precise and so much faster, and that's kind of catapulted my generation into a much different space, a much different environment ecosystem from how my father's generation kind of experienced it. And so when you think about that new mean and that new average and this new system, for it to be truly efficient, there can't really be any outliers. And I do think that, you know, the tortoise, with all the purported wisdom, does to some degree represent an outlier and will ultimately just be rendered kind of obsolete, which is probably pretty rude to say right now next to you.
Well, I'm not going to call myself a tortoise despite my numerous years over yours. So, you know, okay, I get that there could be a standard or a regression to the mean or kind of a natural distribution forms over time in most endeavors. But it's kind of lumpy, you know, in retrospect, when you look back, yeah, there's a norm that emerges. But in fact, ironically, entrepreneurs are the ones that come up with stuff that breaks out of the norms or the means or the standards in an industry. And I think we probably both would agree most entrepreneurs tend to be younger rather than older. So there's a situation where entrepreneurs come up with these kind of unusual ideas, breaking out of a mean that exists. But why does that automatically make the less experienced manager or leader less effective? There's so many examples of young startup founders and CEOs that they might have a great idea, they might kind of break the rules, but then they got to figure out how to run a business, and that requires a set of skills that you're unlikely to have at 26 or maybe even 36 in some cases. That's probably too extreme. You can learn that. Hopefully after 2 years here, you learned a lot of it. But still, there's something to be said for having done something for a while and figuring out what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah, I don't know if I totally agree with that, though, because I think, well, first of all, my reaction to what you just said is drawing back on a personal leadership class that we took where basically we were profiled according to, personality traits that would impact us as a leader, defined us as a leader. And so your article talks a lot about this exact point of, these nuances are what really make a leader effective, and you don't really develop them until you're 40, 50, you've been at a company a long time and you've made some mistakes and you've learned from them. And I think in most cases, I totally agree with that, but I do think that certain qualities are truly innate. Experience is helpful, but I think the fact that I scored pretty high on empathy and very low on other things, but pretty high on empathy is probably a lot more favorable for me than the future CEO who scored very low in their leadership class when they were in business school and had to develop that over the years. I think they definitely have the nuance, but that was more of an uphill battle than it would be for me or any of my peers who, exhibit those qualities from an early age. So I guess the question I'm wrestling with is, if these qualities are innate, how does their application become effective? Like, do you have to develop them first? And I guess my reaction to that is simply that, a 40-year-old who's grown up in a corporate setting and learned a lot and developed leadership skills and, can work with a variety of personalities isn't necessarily better positioned to lead the company of, someone who started at age 30 and they're part of that, Generation X startup culture, super entrepreneurial, super casual. I think there's been just a massive paradigm shift. And so if we're talking about like the distribution being lumpy, like I actually don't think that in the case of, the world that my generation has grown up in, I don't think it's lumpy. I think there's been like a huge transformation, like a very fundamental step change that just makes that nuance nothing but a nice to have, but not necessary, because if you fundamentally just don't know how to exist in that paradigm and that's not really your worldview because that's not how you've grown up, then I just don't see those, skills that come from wisdom as superseding just like how to function in these organizations.
So a couple of things. One is if these skills are innate, if some people are higher or lower on different attributes of personality, then that means that's true for whether you're young or you're old. So it's equal for young people or old people. You either have it or you don't. By that dimension. And then second, it is true, and I've written about this elsewhere, that when some way of operating in an industry is not in your DNA, it becomes pretty tough. When I wrote a little bit about the fashion industry and some of the changes that are going on there, and especially the role of online. Ordering and kind of the multi-channel model, and for traditional retailers, typically run by someone who's in their 50s or 60s even, it's really tough. And for newer companies, entrepreneurs that are in their 20s typically, the idea of using blogs and social media and all the rest, that really is in their DNA. So I think I do see that it's easier when you grow up in a certain way, it's part of your mindset, part of your world, and it's more difficult for people that grew up with a different sensibility. But I think the more you're around, the more you work with people, the more you realize there's certain skills that even if you're lucky enough to be born with it, there's first level, second level, there's certain nuances. And I'd say just one last thing. One of the things that happens in some of the teaching I do with executives and MBA students, for that matter, is there's a tendency for, and this is too broad a generalization, which I guess we've been doing anyways, so we'll stick with it. Less experienced people tend to believe that the right answer will win. If you have the right answer to a problem, people will get it. You don't have to sell the idea. And the more experienced you are, the more you realize it doesn't matter what the right answer is if you can't convince other people that you have a point of view or a solution to a problem. That's really a winning problem. And that is a common thing that I've seen hasn't really changed in a couple of decades, where younger people tend to believe that the right answer will win more often than a more experienced person who actually would be perfectly happy with a reasonably good answer, not necessarily the best answer, as long as they can execute really, really well on it. And that would be an example to me of some of the nuance, if you will. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's wisdom. I don't know what that is. But I don't think we're going to resolve this age-old debate on this podcast, but it's pretty interesting to think about. And I like how you brought in some of the classes you've taken that kind of give some insight here that actually I haven't really thought about that in quite the same way. So if I write a follow-up column about this, I might have to cite some of this conversation.
Sounds good.
Thanks a lot, Nell.
Thank you.
This has been Sid Wazin. If you'd like to comment on this podcast, follow Professor Finkelstein on Twitter @SidFinkelstein, #SidWazin. Thank you for listening.